In a few days, America will begin a year-long celebration of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Now, for most of us, that seemed like a simple thing. A bunch of men got together in Philadelphia and, boom, out popped the Declaration of Independence. And it immediately swept the nation, and then a few years later, the British got smart and went home. And here we are celebrating the joy that that brought, and the things that that brought, and the goodness that that has provided for us here today. It's very likely that few of us, if any, realize just how perilous those times were and how close it came to failure and the suffering that so many of those who signed the Declaration underwent. At the time of the signing, there were about 2.5 million people in the 13 colonies, and less than a million of those were the patriots pushing for the revolution, pushing for separation from Britain. The majority were either opponents, outright opponents of that separation, and a good number were also just indifferent, neutral, didn't really care. But among the patriots were men and women willing to risk everything, put their lives and their fortunes online for this freedom that they sought from the oppressive government of Britain. And so what America will celebrate next year began with people who were willing to suffer for what they believed in, for the cause that they thought was so important. Now, obviously, we're not here this evening to study America's struggle for freedom from the bondage of a foreign power. That's not our goal here. That's not why we're here. Rather, we're here to celebrate our freedom from Satan, sin, and the bondage of this world and the effort that the world puts out to control us. Now, some of us, in the same way that we think sometimes that, well, you know, the Revolutionary War was no big deal, it was. Sometimes we feel that becoming a Christian, especially if we grew up in a religious family and grew up going to church, as the saying goes, we think sometimes that it's easy to become a Christian. And I think we don't realize how difficult it is to break free from Satan's power and break free from the power of sin. Because sin does not want to turn loose of our soul. And the world fights to control us, sometimes quite violently. And so winning the fight against the world and against Satan and against sin means this. From 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 19, that it starts with us. Just like the revolution started with people who were willing to suffer, our faith in God and the work of the church starts with people who are willing to suffer in the name of Christ. And so that is our lesson tonight as we work our way through the text here in 1 Peter chapter 4. Now with that in mind, let's read the text. Let's go to 1 Peter chapter 4, read verses 12 through 19. And then we're going to look at four things that we want to see from the text. Let's go to chapter 4, 1 Peter. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing as though some strange thing were happening to you. But to the degree that you share the sufferings of Christ, keep on rejoicing, so that also at the revelation of His glory, you may rejoice with exultation. If you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of glory and of God rests on you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer or thief or evildoer or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name. For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? Therefore, those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator and doing what is right. So as we look at that text this evening, what we're going to do is we're going to look at four things or see four things from this. We're going to see, first of all, that when it comes to suffering, it must not be unexpected. I know I've kind of gone in for the double negatives, but there's a reason for it, just to make sure that it alliterates, as we talked about this morning. It's biblical, so just go with it. Okay? It must not be unexpected. We must be uncomplaining. It, that is the suffering, must be undeserved, and we must not be unprepared. Those are the four things that we're going to look at as we work our way through these verses. So what does it mean to say that it must not be unexpected? Go back to verse 12. Let's read the verse again. And I have it on the PowerPoint for you. Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery ordeal among you, which comes upon you for your testing, as though some strange thing were happening to you. And you see from the text there that Peter is telling them, don't be shocked when things go bad. Don't be shocked when you are persecuted, when there is a fiery trial coming upon you. We need to keep in mind that when Peter wrote this, he was telling them to understand that things were coming, and he did not know, he probably didn't know what was coming fully, but God had revealed this to him because this was written around 64 AD. Now, for those of you who don't remember and weren't there, like me, July 64 AD, the city of Rome caught fire and over half of it burned to the ground. It was almost completely destroyed. And it wasn't long till the citizens of Rome began to blame Nero. You've heard the saying, Nero fiddled while Rome burned. They figured that Nero was such a weird person and such an obsessive, narcissistic person that he was actually happy that it was burning. In fact, the theory was that he started it. They accused him of starting it because he saw a bunch of land that he wanted to take over and build bigger palaces for himself. And so he fiddled while it was burning. Theoretically, I don't know that that really happened, but that was the mentality and the thinking that developed at that time. And so in order to transfer the anger of the people from himself, he got the brilliant idea of saying, it's you Christians! These ungodly Christians, they don't believe in the gods. They don't believe in the Caesar, they don't worship the gods like we do. It's their fault. And instituted persecution against the church. You know, one of the most horrific acts, and I try not to do these kind of things because it's just gruesome. So I don't show pictures and I don't give vivid descriptions of how they treated people, how Christians were persecuted. But I will give you this one illustration. One of the things that was common for them during this persecution under Nero was when they would find out that someone was a Christian, they'd capture some Christians, they would dip them or they would pour pitch or tar, which is basically a thick, black, oily type of grease or substance on them, and then tie them up on a post or, as we talked about a while back, just impale them on it. And I will not describe that here. I did it in the Bible class a while back. I'm not going to describe it here. Funny. They would impale them on it and then set them on fire as torches at night in their gardens. Now you're sitting there saying, how in the world could somebody be that awful? Well, they could. People can be that awful today too. So don't fool ourselves into thinking that they're not. And so as a result, that would quickly eliminate those who were in the faith for themselves or were mere superficial Christians. Get rid of them in a hurry. Because they're not going to want to go through this. And so they will either leave the faith entirely or when confronted or caught will deny their Lord. And it's no different today. I mean, fortunately, here in America, obviously, we don't face that kind of trial and that kind of testing, not for the most part. And sometimes it does happen, but for the most part, that's just not something that happens here in America. So how would it apply to us? How would we face this? Well, let me ask you this. Is our faith simply to please family or gain social approval in certain circles? We want to be looked at favorably by our friends and neighbor and family. Is that why we're Christians? Or are we looking for some kind of financial benefit? If so, when we run into a world that disapproves us, then we're going to be disappointed, we're going to be unhappy, and we're going to change what we think and do, or at least what we do, because we didn't really think it in the first place. So we're going to quit pretending to believe in Christ, because we don't want anybody to dislike us, or we don't want to lose money. And especially if it got so bad where we had to actually admit, people want to kill me because of my faith in Jesus, I didn't sign up for that. I'm out of here. That's the mentality we have to make sure doesn't take us over or become our mindset. You know, in the Sermon on the Mount, remember that Jesus promised blessing of suffering. I know that's an oxymoron for us, the blessing of suffering, but that's what Jesus promised. Blessed are those who have been persecuted for the sake of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when people insult you and persecute you and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. So we must be prepared, must not be unexpected. We must expect it. We must expect that the world is not going to like us if we take a strong stand for the truth of God and refuse to compromise. They're not going to like it. And we have to ask ourselves, am I ready for that blessing of suffering, or am I shocked at the idea that anybody would dislike me because of my faith? That's what we need. That's what it starts with. It starts with us being expecting suffering. Well, let's go on to the next one, and that is about the uncomplaining part. We must be uncomplaining. We can't be complaining all the time about the things that we can't do because we're Christians, or the people that don't like us because, well, I took a stand on baptism, and I said you have to repent and be baptized for the forgiveness of sins, like Peter said in Acts 2:38. And there are people who just don't agree with that, and so, you know what, I don't want that kind of stress. I don't want that kind of pressure. I don't want anybody, you know, being mad at me for saying that this is what the Bible says. So I'll just keep my mouth shut or just nod my head in agreement and go along to get along. Or I just, you know, or at least certainly we shouldn't be complaining about it. In fact, we should look forward to it as an opportunity to suffer with Christ and for Christ. Turn over to Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5. I've looked at Acts a couple of times earlier today. But in Acts chapter 5, I want us to, or Acts chapter 4. Let's go back to Acts chapter 4. And in Acts chapter 4, the disciples were being persecuted and they were being attacked. And it said that when they got back after this, they were excited about it. The apostles were excited. In verse 23 of Acts chapter 4, it says, when they, that is the apostles, had been released, they went to their own companions and reported all that the chief priests and the elders had said to them. And when they heard this, they lifted their voices to God with one accord and said, O Lord, it is you who made the heaven and the earth and the sea and all that is in them, who by the Holy Spirit spoke, through the mouth of our father, your servant, your servant said, why did the Gentiles rage and the peoples devise futile things? For the kings of the earth took their stand and the rulers were gathered together against the Lord and against His Christ. And then in verse 29, he said, they attacked Jesus in verse 29. And now, Lord, take note of their threats and grant that your bondservants may speak your word with all confidence. They were willing to keep speaking no matter what was charged against them. And then later it says they were beaten and they went back and they said, we got beaten for Jesus. They were excited about it. Can you imagine that? That's just something that we don't understand. Verse 41 of chapter 5. So they went on their way. This was after they got flogged. They went on their way from the presence of the council, rejoicing that they had been considered worthy to suffer shame for His name. So instead of not going beyond just not complaining about it, it should excite us, the idea that Christ, that we would represent Christ so well that the ungodly world would be mad at us. Can we wrap our head around that kind of thinking? Or are we so ingrained in, well, let's don't cause a fuss, let's don't get anybody upset at us. We have to be thinking like this, like the apostles did. And so we share in His suffering, if we will take a stand for Him. And Jesus told the apostles this would happen. John 15, verse 20, He said, remember the word I said to you? A slave is not greater than his master. If they persecuted you, me, they will also persecute you. Which begs the question, if nobody ever gets mad at us because of our religious stance and our religious beliefs, you fill in the blank. So we share in His suffering, not in any kind of redemptive way, since His blood is all sufficient, but because we're connected to Him. And so Peter, going back to 1 Peter chapter, look in verses 1 and 6, look back to chapter 1, verse 6, Peter here in chapter 4 is returning to this theme of suffering for Christ. In 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 6, he says this, and in this you greatly rejoice, even though now for a little while, if necessary, you have been distressed by various trials. And then in chapter 3 and verse 14, we read this, where he says, but even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. Do we look at suffering and the opposition of the world as a blessing or as a curse? A blessing that we embrace, or a curse that we do anything and everything we can to avoid? And we're able to do that if we look beyond this world to eternity. And that's one of the reasons why surface level believers struggle with the idea of suffering, because their view is capped below the sun, under the sun thinking. How I'm living today, how I'm going to live tomorrow, and in the next year, and the year after that, as long as I'm alive here on earth, how am I going to do here on earth? That's the kind of thinking that makes us complain when things don't go well for us. Because there's going to be a day, going back to 1 Peter chapter 4, when we will be glorified, and He will raise us in glory. So do we live in view of the end is near, or do we live in view of what can I get out of this life, and how can I enjoy it, and how can I avoid anything stressful? So, we should not try to avoid being stressed out or attacked or persecuted for our faith. We should be willing to accept that. And if we're willing to accept that, so we must make sure that we don't deserve what we get. So we're not talking about the idea of going out and starting fights and arguing with people and causing problems. That's not the idea there. It's just refusing to back down when people want to tell us to stop talking about Jesus. In 1 Peter chapter 4, let's look now at verses 14 through 16. He says, if you are reviled for the name of Christ, you are blessed, because the Spirit of the glory and of God rests on you. Make sure that none of you suffers as a murderer, or thief, or evildoer, or a troublesome meddler. But if anyone suffers as a Christian, he is not to be ashamed, but is to glorify God in this name. And that does introduce sometimes the idea that we're ashamed of the idea of being suffering. We feel like somehow that's a mark against us. But when it's suffering for Christ, it's not a mark against us. It's not something to be ashamed of. As long as it's not for killing people, you kill people and get caught and go to jail, you deserve it. If you steal from people and you get caught and you go to jail, that's deserved. So we have to ask ourselves, are we attacked by Christ or by the world because of our faith or because of something that we did that we shouldn't have done? Obviously, it better be because of our faith. Questions about that deserve to be heard, and we need to be thinking about, am I doing things that are going to bring problems to me in this world that are wrong, or am I doing what God would have me to do regardless of what problems it brings? That's the mentality we must have. We must be willing to glorify the Lord and glorify God. Now, notice in verse 15, we talked, murderer, we know what that is. Thief, we know what that is. Evildoer is somebody who's a wicked or bad person. But what is a troublesome meddler? What is a troublesome meddler? That's an interesting word. Troublesome meddler is someone, is a busybody in other men's matters. It's a rare word. And it seems to refer to someone who seeks to make others do what he wants. Ever been around anybody like that? You know, I talk about the word police every once in a while. Somebody, we got to say it exactly the way I say it, or you're saying it wrong, and that means you're wrong. Or, it literally means to oversee the things of others. And it's the idea of trying to force people to comply with our own personal preferences. I have a way of saying things, I have a way of doing things, I have my traditions, and everybody else has to comply with the way I say it and with the way I do it and the way I think it. Or you're not right with God. That's a troublesome meddler. It could be something as simple as trying to make everybody wear certain clothes to church. Now, this is not a congregation where that's a problem, thankfully. But there are churches where the idea of not preaching with a jacket and a tie on is just anathema. And in fact, there are churches that used to have, I don't know if they still do, but there are churches that used to have a coat rack behind in the back where the communion was put together. And if you showed up and you were waiting on the table and you didn't have a coat and a tie on, they would make you go put one on. You had to comply to fit a certain mold. It was enforced on people. Or, it could be, as we talked about this morning, the idea that, since December 25th is probably not the birthday of Christ, and even if it was, we don't know for sure, and it doesn't matter because the New Testament doesn't tell us to celebrate it. So if you celebrate Christmas and you have exchanged gifts and put up trees and lights, then I'm going to come to your house and tell you you're sinning. That's a troublesome meddler. We don't want to do that kind of stuff. We don't want to be that kind of person. And that kind of person gets in trouble because they stir up strife among brethren, and especially if they go to their neighbor's house and knock on his door or her door and say, why do you have a child, a baby Jesus out on your front lawn? This isn't the day Jesus was born. You're trying to start a fight with your neighbor. The person who does that is. Don't do that kind of nonsense. That's not what we're supposed to do. Now, on the other hand, in some churches, if a preacher dares point out how Christmas is merely a cultural event without any biblical authority, he's the bad guy and everybody's going to condemn him and he may need to start looking for another place to preach. That's happening among churches. Don't be a meddler in other people's business. Don't try to make everybody conform to the way you like to do things and like to see things done. This just isn't the way it's supposed to be. Well, then the last thing is here, we must not be unprepared. And that is, we've got to be prepared for and ready for. Not only do we expect it, but we need to be ready for it. In verse 17, he says this, "For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. And if it begins with us first, what will be the outcome for those who do not obey the gospel of God? And if it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? Therefore, those also who suffer according to the will of God shall entrust their souls to a faithful Creator in doing what is right." So not only do we expect it, not only do we prepare for it, or not only do we not complain about it, And not only do we not do things that we intend to get suffering for, we also need to prepare for suffering. Get ready for it. Know that it's coming. And I want us to notice what he starts with there. Let's go back to verse 17, the very first part of verse 17. For it is time for judgment to begin with the household of God. Remember, Peter speaking to people who are about to undergo persecution under Nero and under the Roman Empire. And it's going to be ugly. So it's the beginning. And the thing about the judgment is that this is a constant expectation for Christians, because whether we like it or not, the world despises people who are going to do the will of God. They may claim to, I'm so glad that you're religious. Oh, you think that I shouldn't be living this way? Oh, thanks. Back up the truck because you're about to get run over. Now, one of the things that we can do, I think, is we talked about this the other day, we foolishly look back and think about the former days and how they were better with godliness, but that's not true. Worse things have happened and worse things will continue to have happened in the past than anything we're going to undergo. But we have to understand, standing for the truth of God's Word has always made us societal outcasts, even here in America. In every generation, all who took a stand for simple New Testament doctrines, such as the necessity of baptism, are rejected and excluded from the denominational churches. We're not welcome there if we hold to that teaching. And every third generation or so, churches of Christ become bigger and more powerful and richer. And then they begin to drift, and they will reject and kick out those who take a stand against the things that they're doing. Just the way it happens. And it's happening. It's happening here in Kentucky. It's happening across the country. We're in the middle of a third generation division among conservative churches of Christ. Because there are people who just, they don't understand why we don't do the things that other churches do. And they haven't been taught on it, haven't talked about it enough, and that's a different discussion. And so we have to ask ourselves, do we serve God or a group that calls itself Church of Christ? I'm not going to belabor that point, but I want you to think about that. Do I serve God? That's what the question you need to ask yourself. Am I a servant of God? Or is my affiliation with the Church of Christ? And you wonder, maybe, well, what's the difference? Well, the difference is God. The name does not make us right with God. God and compliance with His will makes us right with God. And therefore, we wouldn't call ourselves Church of Christ or Church of God. There are other names that we could call ourselves. But our affiliation and our allegiance must be to be God first. Because people will make up decisions and determine to do things that are unscriptural, that are called Church of Christ, and they'll try to make us go along with it. And if we don't go along with it, they'll kick us out. My mentor, one of the smartest men I ever met in my life, one of the most godly men and one of the most biblically sound men, he taught me more about New Testament church than anybody I've ever met, was fired from a church because in Gladewater, Texas in the 1950s because he refused to teach what they wanted him to teach. And they told him, "You will never preach in a Church of Christ again." "I'll make sure of that," one of the elders said that. And he said, "Well, you can make sure that I don't preach here anymore. And you can make sure that there are other churches that I will not be welcome in. You can do that, but you're not going to stop me from preaching the gospel and teaching the truth." He was prepared for the blowback of teaching the truth. What this tells us here is that God purges the church, purges His church individually and collective to eliminate, to put pressure on those who don't want to serve Him. And the pressure's on all, and the pressure will come, and those who don't want to serve Him, they'll go. And the ones who want to serve Him and determined to serve Him, they'll stick it out no matter what. And so he puts Christians everywhere, you and me, through fiery trial. And fortunately here in America, it's the fiery trial of social pressure and religious pressure, not physical pressure, to bring us out the other side, purified in faith, in a faith that is all about Him instead of us and what makes us comfortable. And what happens is that when that happens, those who wear God as a cultural coat of convenience do not stand a chance. But those who suffer because of doing what is right for Him and trust their souls to Him as Jesus did on the cross. See, Jesus obeyed all the way to His death on the cross. And He's telling us, that's what I want you to do. Obey Me all the way, even if it brings you death. Are we prepared to do that? And so as we wrap up, we ask this question, and we just want to think about this. Have you entrusted your soul to God? If you're prepared for suffering, if you're prepared for it, then you have entrusted your soul to God. But if you're not prepared, what's going to happen? Think about this again. This is what he said earlier. If obedient believers face the judgment of God, what's going to happen to the defiantly disobedient? He makes it very clear there in verse 18. He asked the question there in verse 18. If it is with difficulty that the righteous is saved, what will become of the godless man and the sinner? So, suffering is a part of being a Christian. Even if it's just the social pressure of, well, why don't you do all the things we do at Christmas? Why don't you do all, you know, why don't you have a special Christmas service? Those kind of things. Even if that kind of social pressure can sometimes be pretty tough because of the people we want to please. But we have to say that we serve God. Well, let's end up with this final question. If you're not a Christian, will you follow God's path to salvation? If we can help you be right with God tonight, come forward. Let us help you find glory in Jesus Christ. Please come while we stand and while we sing.